Well, Jason, I guess this is it.
I think you might be right. In fact, if anyone is listening to this, we'd recommend borrowing as much money as you can from all your friends and neighbors.
You should do it. You should do it before Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
Because I read on the internet today that big rocks going to fall out of the sky and squash us.
It's those blood moons. We should have paid more attention to the blood moon.
Is it the blood moon? Is there a blood? Is another one of those happening on Yom Kippur?
I'm not sure. It seems to be one every 2 weeks, but it's definitely all tied together. And so if you're out and about and there's a big shadow that seems to be getting bigger and bigger, don't look up. It'll just really ruin your day.
It'll be over pretty soon. But this will be the last Torah portion because next week we'll be squashed.
That's right. Yeah, it's gonna be a really short Torah portion.
Apparently. There was supposed to be two more after this, and I know everyone's been hanging for us to finish it's kind of out of our control. So we're just gonna do this one.
Yeah.
And this is the last one because big rock.
I mean, spoiler alert. Moses dies at the end. So there, if you were wondering where it went.
Well, so do we.
That's right.
This is no more on Yom Kippur. Yeah. Big rock falls out of the sky. Do you know where this originated from? And does this come from an authoritative source? Because everything that came to my attention is kind of messianic or Christian. They might be right. And I think they think that Jesus is surfing this rock, which I suppose it's good for the Christians because they get to get raptured off the earth before the rock hits. Is that what happens? Have you read up on this?
Yeah, you know, to be fair. Right, so I was thinking about this morning. I'm looking at Facebook, and often you have to take what you read on Facebook with a pinch of salt. You really have to be careful when you watch. If you get your news from Facebook, you're asking for trouble. Like, check your sources.
All right, so
in relation to this asteroid, there is an asteroid. Sorry, no, to say it again. There was an asteroid, but I think that was in mid-August. And everyone said that was going to hit, and it didn't. Way away, it was miles away. It wasn't even close. And I think this may be one of those areas where people are so wanting it to be true that they just kind of changed the date a little bit to make it happen. But NASA's categorically said that there's no asteroid. There's nothing there. It's not that it's going to be a near miss or anything. It's just nothing there.
There's nothing quite like a cataclysmic event combined with a Jewish holiday to make everybody go crazy.
Yeah, that's true. That's
so true. You're suggesting that this might not be this might not happen.
I really don't think it will.
I like to think of. Do you remember Joe Satriani's first album?
No, I don't. Oddly,
what? I'd like to say good day to all the guitarists out there at this point. Joe Satriani, and he had you've heard of the Silver Surfer, right?
Oh yeah.
That he had the Silver Surfer on his. But that's how I always like to remember Joe Satriani's first album. It was such a great. I didn't know that it was even a comic, but it's a great comic, and
yeah, it is.
It's the Silver Surfer, and that's the way I like to think of Jesus on an asteroid on his way to Earth.
It's like a big rock concert.
Big rock concert, but you're saying that it may not be happening. All right, I'll tell you what. We'll make a deal with the listeners. If it doesn't happen, if there's a chance that Jesus is not surfing on an asteroid to come and squash us all, then on the Yom Kippur this next week, we'll do another program. What do you reckon?
Yeah. Well, maybe not on day, but we'll have something ready for the Friday.
We'll continue on with the Torah pills.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. We'll see how we go.
If it does happen,
we could do anything with this program. I mean, we've already axed Tobia. He's not here. We can play up as much as we want.
We could just make stuff up.
What is it? Should we do a proper, should we put the music on or something like that?
Yeah, if you like. Can I just say first, though, that I remember, right, so back in, we've gone through the hoops on this. We started off as a Christian. We went through the whole Hebrew roots thing. And I remember the feeling that you got when you were worried about the chip, the chip they were going to put in your hand, and it's the mark of the beast, and how the economies are going to fail, and you should put all your money into silver, and you should stock up on beans and rice because all the shops are going to be empty, and it's last day stuff. And it does give you a little tingle of excitement that helps fuel your faith in the text.
Sure.
Now, and that's a really perfect example of how your emotion drives your faith, which drives your faith in the text, when it should really run the other way. The text should drive your faith, and that should cause an emotion. But the, you know, to say it, the New Testament text works the other way around. You have to feel emotionally emotive towards something happening and then feed that with writing afterwards. And that somehow makes the writing more legitimate. It's totally the wrong way of doing it. But I can remember feeling that way. I can remember filling up my shelves with...
We were joking about that the other day. I'm not kidding. Honey and I were saying, do you remember that time we filled up our shelves? We filled the pantry with canned beans and all of those ones because we thought that, you know, the end of the world was coming and all of these.
Yeah.
Because it does. I mean, you know, I remember people that sort of went a little bit nuts and went and lived in caves or wanted to.
But what we have to remember is that the text doesn't say that that's going to happen. It says that, you know, when this messianic age comes, it's the world we're living in. It's this planet. It's this rock. It's the same sun, the same moon, the same water, the same landmass. There's no one starves. You know, it's the end of hunger, not the beginning of hunger. But you know, when it's much more exciting sometimes to have a little bit of fantasy in your life,
Doctor Who, right?
Yeah. I'm not saying get rid of Doctor Who. If the BBC is listening, that's not what I'm saying. We keep Doctor Who.
So we are. No, I'm gonna. No, hang on. Before we go on, playing the music right now. Around the world, and thank you for joining us once again on truth2u.org. That's truth2u.org and season 2 of Torah Pearls. I'm Jono, and joining me in the virtual Truth to You studio all the way from Ireland is Jason of spiritualbabies.net. G'day, mate.
G'day. I'm just building a small hurricane shelter from all of my books and pillows. I think I'm gonna live this through if it kills me.
You're gonna survive. That's good. We are in Vayelech.
Yeah,
that's where we are. Deuteronomy chapter 31, pretty much Deuteronomy chapter 31, I think. That's what it is. Okay, well, listen, it begins like this. You ready?
Yeah.
Then Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel. He said to them, I am 120 years old today. Let's stop there. That makes me want to jump back to, what is it? Is it Genesis chapter 6 verse 3, I think? Because there's a lot of people saying, well, you know, that's as far as he can live. Because so it says, Genesis 6, 3, it says, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever. He is indeed flesh, and his days shall be 120 years old. And that's the traditional understanding of that verse, that God limit. Now, he didn't limit. Now, and I'm not, you know, I don't know. I remember there was some report, maybe a few decades ago, of a French woman who made it to 122. I don't know how accurate those records are. But people certainly struggle to get past 120 these days. You never kind of, it doesn't make the papers. And God didn't do that straight away, but it seemed to be that within centuries, nobody sort of lived past that point.
No, and the tradition is that, people have different understandings of it, but the tradition is he was actually 120 years old on that day. I mean, the fact that this day comes in... Right, I am 120 years old this day. I mean, why not now? Or why not I'm 120 years old? This day leads people to think that that was the final day, that there was a reason for that day being a special day, and that's why it's in the text. The interesting bit is the next part. I can no more go out and come in.
Yeah.
So... we have to ask ourselves, well, what does that mean? We know from the end of this story that his eyes didn't dim and he retained, what was the phrase, his natural moisture, which if you do a little bit of research, that's kind of an interesting term, which we definitely can't go into in this program. But let's say he was very healthy as a man. Because we know he was kind of fit, he was ready to go, why can't he go out and why can't he come in? So there's a few different understandings of this. One is that the authority had been taken away from him to make decisions regarding the future of Israel, right? So as a judge, someone who takes in the information and gives out the rules on certain things, he was no longer qualified for that. That's now Joshua's job, which we go into in more detail here. But I think the most important thing is that he can no more go forward and he can no more come into the land. This is like the full stop to his life. He's accepted that. And there are, again, lots of interesting traditions behind this story, kind of oral traditions and stories regarding his conversations with Joshua and the people, and Joshua now being, because it must have been a very difficult time, right? He's already told Joshua in private what's going to happen, but now he has to tell the people. And if supposing there's a position where the people are standing and watching the two of them, and now they're wondering, why is Joshua the one kind of seemingly in charge now? And Moses hasn't said anything yet, so everyone's kind of confused. There must have been a little bit of discomfort in the camp. And so anyway, yeah, but that's kind of what we get in this passage. We get Moses telling the people what's going to happen regarding their leadership, their future, and in a much bigger context, the future of Israel as a whole in the world beyond them entering the land.
So it says in verse 3? Oh, yeah, cross over the Jordan. Joshua himself crosses over before you, just as the Lord has said. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon, to Og, to the kings of the Amorites in their land when he destroyed them. The Lord will give them over to you, that you may do to them according to every commandment which I have commanded you. Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear or be afraid of them. For the Lord God, he is one who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you.
How often have we heard up to this point, be strong and of good courage? Or would you say it's a kind of a familiar phrase up to this point?
I'm inclined to say, yeah, it sounds familiar.
Because most famously, Joshua says that to the people. Mm. Right at the beginning of the book of Joshua, probably going to be on the first page of everyone's Bible. But Moses says that like four or five times in this Torah parsha. And I can't help thinking that Joshua's paying super special attention now to how Moses deals with the people, and he takes this on as a mantra. So when Joshua leads Israel forward, he says, "What did Moses do when it got sticky? You know, when things were starting to get rough and they were entering the new land." Mm. So we're gonna hear Moses say this an awful lot over the next few chapters, and it's kind of interesting in that. Be strong and of good courage is more about having faith in God than faith in their future or faith in themselves. It says, don't be frightened of the people, because the Lord your God goes with you. I think that's the most important part. He won't fail you and he won't forsake you. And him not failing the people and not forsaking the people is something that, again, we have to remember through this. I had a conversation with a person yesterday over a video I put up, and they said on YouTube that the Messianic Age didn't happen as was promised in Jeremiah 31 because the Jews rejected Jesus. And because of that, God failed and forgot Israel. But we know from the text that that's an absolute impossible thing to happen. That they're a treasured people. So we kind of have to read this line for line and remember when we get to parts like this that this isn't just a one-off. He's not going to not forsake them for a week. He doesn't forsake them, period.
Then Moses called Joshua and said to him, in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. Do not fear. Do not be dismayed.
That's pretty cool. So it says there that Moses says to Joshua in front of the sight of the whole of Israel, because in Deuteronomy 3:28, it's the end of 3. he tells Joshua in private. It's like a few portions ago. He tells Joshua in private. Now he's doing it in public. The really cool part is the part that's coming up. So when we read through 9-13, it's worth remembering here that what makes this almost unique among world religions is that this faith is a completely open source faith. There are no key holders to this. There's no one in charge of the door. There's no one in charge of the chest. all the law is said to all the people, from the children to the parents, to the priests, to the elders, to the slaves. Everyone gets an equal opportunity to learn the whole of this law. Mm. So it goes forward. You don't have to approach anyone and ask what it means. You don't have to buy a special expensive book to understand what it says. You don't have to be part of a group or a cult, or, you know, it's a tiny niche group that it's got some guru telling you what the words mean. God explains through his prophets and through the Torah exactly what's expected of the people. Mm. And it's super important for people to remember that. There's no, it's a complete religious democracy. I find that really refreshing to remember, that it's a free religion and and nothing is hidden. It's an everlasting possession for the people to keep and to hear and to do. So it's worth remembering that for the next chapter.
He will not leave you nor forsake you, so do not fear nor be dismayed. I like the word dismayed, and just when I read that, it reminded me of Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 2. Mr. Spiritual Babies, and this is what it says. Do not learn the ways of the Gentiles. Do not be dismayed at the signs of heaven. Mm. For the Gentiles are dismayed at them. Yeah. What does that remind you of? Rocks falling out of the sky and squashing people? Mm. Anyway, let's continue on, shall we? From verse 9. So Moses wrote this law. He wrote the law and delivered it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, to all the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the appointed time, in the year of release, at the Feast of Sukkot, there we go, Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing, gathering the people together, the men, the women, the little ones, and the ger, right? Is that, am I right? I've got stranger, and the stranger who is within your gates, that they may hear, and that they may learn to fear the Lord your God and carefully observe all the words of this law, that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land which you cross the Jordan to possess. Jason.
Yes, way cool. And yeah, you're right. It is Ger. So the Ger in the text is the person who lives within the gates of Israel, abides by all the rules of Israel, but isn't technically Israel in that they aren't descended from the tribes or those who
Don't own land.
Yeah, they don't own land. They didn't leave with Moses. They didn't leave Egypt. They weren't at Sinai. So this is passed on a bit, and it's not surprising that during that period, people would have seen the awe of God and want to be part of that group. Mm. So yeah, that's for another. The different types of ger is a different thing, but in this instance, the ger is the person who's undertaken the law. They're living within within Israel on a daily basis, the law is for them as well. But you know, in the same way that the law in Ireland is for everyone in Ireland. I'm not Irish, but I have to abide by the same rules. I don't get to do all of the things because I'm not Irish and I'm not a policeman and I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a doctor. So different parts of the law apply to different people. Mm-hmm. So I did have something else here. It's the Shemitah year. I think the church probably called it the sabbatical year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have asked why is it read on this year? And the tradition here is that you'll find that this pops up a few times. As often there's a correlation in the text between God giving miraculous signs and wonders over a period of time and the people taking that blessing as a sign that they're kind of infallible and that they're doing it themselves and that they deserve it. Mm. And the tradition is that because there's no sowing and reaping and that they're looked after this year, the Torah is read every 7 years on this year to remind the people that it's God that put them in this position. It's not their hard work from the previous year. Mm. It's that they're being looked after because they're God's treasured people. And they're not self-sufficient, if you like, that God is sufficient for them rather than them for themselves.
Then the Lord said to me, this is a bit rough, this is verse 14, and the Lord said to Moses, behold, the days approach when you must die. I mean, that's not the kind of news that you want to hear, but it's just put to him in such a black and white way. Call Joshua and present yourself in the tabernacle of meeting that I may inaugurate him. This is the Lord speaking to Moses. And again, and you've already alluded to this, but this takes us back to Deuteronomy chapter 18, doesn't it? And we did a program on this. We've mentioned it a couple of times during the Torah Pearls, but a lot of people say, who is that? The prophet likened unto Moses that we read about in 18. And very, very clearly, it is Joshua, and here it is outlined for us. So Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tabernacle of meeting, and now the Lord appeared to Lord appeared at the tabernacle in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood above the door of the tabernacle. And the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, you will rest with your fathers, and this people will rise and play the harlot with the gods of the foreigners of the land where they go to be among them, and they will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them. Then my anger shall be aroused against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil which they have done, in that they have turned to other gods." Jason.
When Joshua is brought into the tent, God commands him what to do, and then he turns to Moses. So I find it interesting there that there's no promise for Moses, right? What we don't read about very often in the Tanakh is an afterlife. But what's interesting, especially in the Torah, is it's never a reference to, don't worry, Moses, it's all going to be all right, you'll get into heaven. The reward is that your body will be placed in a place gathered to your fathers. That's the reward, that you'll be a part of this continual line, and your seed will live in the land. Mm-hmm. And you won't be forgotten. That's the prize, if you like, for this. And I find it super interesting that there's never any coaxing or blackmail beyond the life that you're living.
It seems to be an assumed knowledge that we just don't hear about in black and white.
What I mean is that in Ezekiel 18 it says that all souls belong to God. Mm-hmm. And what we don't hear is, if you do this, you'll get to heaven. If you do this, your soul will come to me. That's assumed already, like you said. And I find it lovely that the reward here isn't something that's going to happen after you die. It's the reward is just through doing it. The reward is the action itself, and knowing that you're pleasing God, and that you're doing the right thing. And that's quite refreshing, coming from a time where you have to do this if you want to get to heaven. You have to do this if you want to be if you want to be saved, if you like. But it's not the case. You do it because you're asked to do it, and you want to abide by God's word. Yeah. And it's pretty cool. Yeah, so we have a part at the top there where it says that everyone has to hear the law, to hear it, to learn it, and to observe it, which kind of means to do it. To learn it obviously means to have learned it. So there's there's a kind of implicit command there to study out this law, where the interesting part here is that people would have only heard this law once every 7 years, which makes that it's a completely orally transmitted thing. You can't just go home and have a look. You have to rely on the teaching of your parents telling you as a child until your next chance to hear it what the text says. And I like that too, that there's in the home
it's practiced in the home, right? So you practice it out, but you hear it in its bare form as it's read, because I mean it is written down, but it's read every 7 years to the people, and they can go, oh, of course, that's why we do that. Oh, that's why we don't do that.
Yeah, and it's a cyclical thing, and that you and your neighbors, you discuss it, you keep it fresh in your mind. So in 16, and the Lord said unto Moses, "Behold, you're going to sleep with your people, but the people are going to rise up and go astray. Now I've got astray in mind. You had go after."
For this people will rise and play the harlot with the gods of foreigners.
Yeah, that's actually a really good translation. Or go astray after the foreign gods of the land. So it's basically saying that I'm going to die, but I know exactly what's going to happen. And this not only is a kind of a prophecy, but it's kind of like a promise. And we can look back now knowing that that's exactly what happened. Mm. That Israel, it broke into the two groups, and both of those groups were punished for their actions, and both of them went after foreign idols and foreign gods. And that God knew this was going to happen. Mm. And because he knew it was going to happen, we can know that this was a prophecy that was fulfilled years and years and years after Moses' death. And that has to give us some security, that the continuation, if you like, of prophecy, that it was a done deal, that they didn't just die with Moses and Ezekiel and Jeremiah, that even now there are, sad to say, members of the congregation of Israel who go after foreign gods or no gods at all. Mm. And this is something that God totally saw coming, and that he's ready for. And the part here where he talks about his anger, that
anger shall be aroused against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured.
And because it's interesting that the people say that, right? They acknowledge that they've done something wrong, and then they impose the judgment on themselves, and they kind of throw it back in God's face. They say, well, you know, he's hid his face from us, and that's why bad things are happening. Where the truth would be that we did bad things, and that's why God hid his face from us. And we're at that time of the year where we're asked to make teshuvah. We're asked to repent of the bad things that we've done and turn around and face God again, so he can turn around and face us. And that's exactly what's in this text. But it's kind of funny that the people do a switcheroo on that. But it's also interesting that they totally accept, they understand what they've done wrong, but they aren't willing to fix it yet because they haven't gone through the mill.
That's really interesting. No, I'm glad you pointed that out. And it is it's hard to read and certainly hard to meditate on. And yet it's something that we should really read a couple of times and let it sink in as we approach Yom Kippur. It continues in verse 19. Now, therefore, because this is going to happen, he's saying to Moses and Joshua, now, therefore, write down this song for yourselves and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. Now, get that. This is the reason why the song is given. Therefore, write down this song and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. When I have brought them to the land flowing with milk and honey, of which I swore to give their fathers, and they have eaten and filled themselves and grown fat, then they shall turn to other gods and serve them, and they will provoke me and break my covenant. And it shall be, when many evils and troubles have come upon them, that this song will testify against them as a witness, for it will not be forgotten in the mouths of their descendants. For I know the inclination of their behavior today, even before I have brought them to the land of which I swore to give them. So now the song is actually next week's Torah portion, right?
Right, it is the whole thing, but it's to be learned off by heart. It was something that you should teach to your children. They teach to their children. It's always in their brains. It's something that they sing growing up, and that's why it's a witness, and that's why it shall not be forgotten. And then they'll get to the point in their lives where things have suddenly gone crappy, and they're like, I wonder, like, why did he leave us on our own when things have gotten so rough? And then maybe one of them starts humming this song and everything becomes clear. But yeah, it's one of those things which, traditionally, a religious Jewish household will teach their kids the Torah, period. But this song was something that was separate to that, but included. And it was something that should be, when it says put it in their mouths, it literally means to know it by heart. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they should know it by heart as well. And that it would be that witness.
And so I remember hearing in regards to verse 20, bring them into the land flowing with milk and honey, a land of plenty, of which I swore to give to their fathers. And they have eaten, but not only have they eaten, that they are filled. They've filled themselves. And not only have they filled themselves, but they've grown fat. In other words, they've got excess. They have so much that they feel, they say perhaps to themselves, we've got everything. What could possibly go wrong? I have more than I need. I'm full, and in fact, I've grown fat. I've got excess. Then they will turn to other gods and serve them, and they will provoke me and break my covenant.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because as we saw earlier, the Torah was read every 7 years at the time where they had excess. That's when they weren't relying on their own work to give them food. And we read later, when we go through the prophets, that the northern kingdom was in exactly this position. They had a really great army. They had a really great kingdom. Their folds and their farms were super prosperous, and everyone was overly fat and overly drunk, and even the temple was somewhere they drink. And at that point, they started to say, we don't need God, right? We're doing fine on our own. And it wasn't until things started to get bad that then they start remembering their God again. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. This is what this prophecy is speaking about, that kind of act. The interesting part for me here is that God knows this, right? He knows human nature. He knows this is what's going to happen. The question, I suppose, is how seriously do you punish a people for doing something that you know they're going to do and they can't change, that you can't change? You know, if you know that your dog is wetting the floor every morning when you get up.
The dog's going outside.
But how angry should you be at the dog when you know that that's part of the dog's nature? It's a difficult thing to adjust, you know. But I think that's one of the reasons that.
But should it be? It be part of their nature? Should it be? Because with everything that God has done in the eyes of the Israelites, Mount Sinai, should it be their nature? Should we not be keeping to the covenant, being obedient to the commandments, and forsaking foreign gods and so on and so forth, and yet we don't. I don't know that we can – boy, this could get very deep very soon. But I don't know that we can say that that we're programmed to do this, therefore why would God set it up like this and then be angry at us?
Yeah, it's not so much that we're programmed. It's the fact that God knew this was going to happen.
He knew that it was going to happen, yeah.
Right. And because he knew it was going to happen, then we have to assume that that was part and of the particular people that were living at that particular time, he knew that was going to happen. Should we keep by the covenant? Yeah, we should. I think it's human, right? So I have this utility room, and in the top right hand corner we've got this fuse box that deals with all the fuses in the house. And a while ago we had an issue with one of the fuses, and the electrician came. He didn't have the one we wanted, and he did this thing with a piece of copper coil and tinfoil and stuck it in, and it worked, right? But he said, whatever you do, don't touch it. What? So for the next 4 months, I was terrified of even opening the door to that cupboard, right?
Right.
But that was maybe 2 years ago now. And now I'm not fussed. I'm in there and I'm rumbling around this stuff and I'm getting quite close to it. I'm not fussed by it, even though I know it could kill me. And I think that's human nature, right? That there's a point in the desert where the people are seeing the amazing things that God's doing to them, and the punishment sometimes that God's giving them. But when they get into a land where suddenly they've got an abundance of everything and no one's dying and there's no massive floods and there's no armies taking them into exile, and you know, they've got everything they could possibly need, suddenly the fear, when it says fear, the awe and fear of this thing, be like the lion keeper at the zoo. You know, for the guy that's on his first day of the job, he's totally terrified of that lion. But three or four years later, he's going to have a healthy respect, and possibly if he's not very good at his job, 10 years later, he maybe is a bit lackadaisical against that lion. He thinks that lion's no threat to me. But at some point, he's going to go too far, and that lion's going to take his hand off.
So what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, is that if I don't hear from you for a couple of weeks, then what that means is you've been in the utility cupboard and you've just got a bit too relaxed.
A little bit too relaxed, yeah. Right. It's not where you want to practice your baton flinging or skipping rope. That's not the place to do that. Okay. But yeah, but there's human nature that you get complacent when you have enough.
Or
more than enough, you know. That's why God is sufficient. And if, as long as he's sufficient, people generally stay on the straight and narrow. But when they have too much, they get complacent. Oh, that went on longer than I thought it was going to. All right. Okay.
Therefore, Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the children of Israel. He inaugurated. Now, this is interesting. Verse 23. What do you have in verse 23?
And he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge, which actually means commandment, and said, here we go again, be strong and of good courage, for thou shalt bring the children of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with thee.
That, see? A little bit like Obi-Wan Kenobi, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm. What do you think of that? Although, when I'm looking at my the notes I've made for this, most people read that he gave is the capital H, because
Now that's right. Now I also have a capital H. Now it's an interesting thing. Okay, so verse 22, therefore Moses wrote this song the same day and he taught it to the children of Israel. Moses is the he. Mm-hmm. He taught it to the children of Israel. Then he inaugurated. Now, yes, in my New King James, I do have a capital H for the he, but of course we don't have that in the Hebrew.
No.
We have to adjust it with the context, because we know that Moses has been told, you're not crossing over. You're not going there. So when it says, I will be with you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I've got, and he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge and said, be strong and of good courage. All right. But, you know, Chabad says that he commanded Joshua the son of Nun. This refers to the Shekinah. God is the speaker. God is the speaker, and it's evident from the use of the first person to the land which I have sworn to them. Oh, yeah, there we go. In 21, it says, I know their imagination and how they do even now before I have brought them into the land which I swore. And that says, so Moses wrote this song, but it doesn't say that Moses spoke.
Ah, and therefore it's a continuation of God speaking.
Right.
Brilliant. Happy with that. Makes perfect sense. Thank you, Mr. Spiritual Baby. So from verse 24, so it was when Moses had completed writing the words of this law in a book, when they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and put it beside the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there as a witness against you. For I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. If today, while I'm still alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord, then how much more after my death?
Mm.
He's pretty cranky at this point. I would be cranky too after the whole thing, you know, where it got so trying that he even said to God, can you just kill me now? Just kill me now. And now he's 120 and God said to him, look, you know, you've done a great job, but this is what they're going to do after you die, you know. In the future, this is how it's going to work out. And he's kind of cranky, and this is what he says to them. And he goes on and says, gather to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing and call heaven and earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death, you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you. And evil will befall you in the latter days, because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. Jason.
Well, one of the largest areas of contention in this last part of chapter 1 is actually where the Torah scroll was placed, or where the book of the law was placed. There's a whole argument between people that say it was on a shelf that came out of the ark. Some people say it was on the inside of the ark. I personally think it was probably on the outside of the ark. It was meant to be a witness so people could see it. And I think it was on the outside. So people, if you've got an idea of where you think it was, let us know in the comments.
Because the tablet, it's generally understood that the tablets of stone are inside the ark, right?
Right, yeah. And I think that obviously Aaron's staff goes in there, some manna goes in there. But I think that this book of the law...
We did a program about this.
We did,
because the book of Hebrews in the New Testament claims that Aaron was a pygmy and that his staff went inside the box.
That's right, yeah. I was really hoping you'd say that.
I should have said dwarf. Sorry to all the pygmies. I should have said dwarf.
Yeah.
But because he had a really short staff, yeah. According to the Book of Hebrews. But in actual fact, we went. Remember, we went back and we did this, the staff. That's the almond branch that budded. It flowered. It even produced fruit. And they put that before the ark. And before I do believe the pot of manna was also before the ark.
And that's why I think the book of the law was before the ark, because it was a witness for people as a visual aid. I think it was somewhere in 2 Kings, wasn't it? That was the last reference that we found for the contents of the ark. Mm. But one of the interesting parts here is that in the verse, I think there's 29 in the Hebrew. I don't know if it's the same in. It is. It's 29 in the Christian 1:2. It says that to provoke him with anger through the work of your hands. The kind of the plain reading of that, someone might think that is like the everyday work of a person's hands, but it's actually relating to the creation of idols and the worship of idols, which is a reference to, I think it's 4:28, Deuteronomy 4:28,
mm-hmm.
Where we talk about the idols that you create with your hands in silver and gold.
Right, that makes perfect sense. Mm. Now, that is not where our Torah portion ends. There is one more verse. In the Hebrew, it's verse 1 of chapter 32. In the Christian translation, it's verse 30 of chapter 31. I think I've got that right. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Okay, this is what it says. And then Moses spoke in the hearing of all the assembly of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. Now, it's going to be it's next week, right, that you and Toby are doing a two-part harmony of this song?
Yes.
As long as a rock hasn't fallen us between now and then and squash us, that's what the listeners have got to look forward to.
I'll tell you what, if the rock does squash us, that's exactly what they've got to look forward to. If it doesn't...
as opposed to a two-part harmony of you and Tobio and the Song of Moses. But it actually, it goes on. Like, it really, it's, what is it, about over three pages.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it is in depth. It does go on. But it is something that we're to commit to heart. And I will admit, I have to say, I don't know it off by heart. Do you?
No, not at all.
You better start practicing if you're going to sing this next week.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I tried. But it's very long. And without a tune, if there was a tune, I'd probably be a little bit easy to remember because I'm actually quite good at lyrics. But
By the way, there is a tune, and maybe we can ask Toby about that next week. Now, where is Toby? Well, he heard that the rock was coming, and he got a whole lot of tanks, and he's gone to the bottom of the ocean to see if he can. No. Where is he? By the way, do we know where he is?
I think he's
island hopping.
Synagogue. He's visiting lots of different people. Yeah. I mean, we have to remember Tovia is a rabbi, and it's right in the middle of the...
In the jungles of Indonesia. Holidays.
Yeah. So he's got a lot of people to see and a lot of different things to organize.
He does. He does indeed. But we look forward to speaking with him next week, as long as the rock doesn't squash us. Thank you, Mr. Spiritual Babies of spiritualbabies.net. What's going on spiritualbabies.net?
Oh, what is going on? So I've been carrying on. I've got a series I'm doing called Two Witnesses, which is based on a book by Jonathan Seudel. If you find that book on Amazon, it's really good. It basically highlights all the areas in the Christian text which reference the Hebrew text, and then tells you whether that reference is in context. And I spoke to the author a year ago, and since then I've been doing these 2 and 3 minute videos. And I did a couple of those yesterday that went up.
Mm.
They've been quite well received. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I say well received. Well, not so much by some people. So I got a couple of those. People are free to do those. And I've been writing a lot more lately as well, which has been quite enjoyable. People can go over there and check out some of my podcasts.
You've been painting. You've done a few more paintings as well.
Yeah. So over at spiritualbabies.deviantart.com, I put up my pictures. I did quite a nice... Shanatova one I did for Rosh Hashanah, which I was quite happy with. I generally do one picture a week. If people have got any ideas on a theme, biblical themes for pictures, that'd be great, because sometimes I'm really dying to do a painting because I find it quite cathartic to sit down for like 3 hours and draw. But I'm totally at a loss of what to do, so I'd be interested in people's ideas. But people can buy those over at DeviantArt. They can type in Spiritual Babies into the search menu and you'll find my page. And I get a little cut of that depending on what you buy. I get a little bit of help towards the running costs of Spiritual Babies. So that would be great. Why are you just selling all of my stuff? I also do podcasts. You can find me on iTunes.
And you can. So that's it. So that's spiritualbabies.net. I'll put a link, of course, on this post. Thank you, Mr. Spiritual Babies. And look, it is Yom Kippur is coming up next week, and it is the most important day, I think, on the most important day of the year for the Jewish people. And I wish everybody, you can't really say, you know, happy Yom Kippur. It's not that kind of a
day. You can say have a good Yom Kippur, because even though it's a time where you kind of you afflict your soul and you plummet into the depths of your heart, and you know, you go through all the old baggage, and even though that's not a very pleasant experience, it's still a good experience to go through. So I think it's still fair to say that, you know, have a Yom Tov, have a good day,
have a meaningful one.
Yeah,
and may it be that a giant rock doesn't fall out of the sky and squashes. I think it's pretty safe that we're going to be okay.
Because we've got a holiday coming up in like 6 weeks.
That's right. We've got to go to Israel. We've got a tour coming on.
We can't have
rocks falling out of the sky and squashing us.
No.
We've got things to do. All right. Clearly, that's not going to happen. So in that case, dear listeners, be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's word. Shalom.